He's seen it from all sides. As a cop, as a clergyman, as a candidate, even a professional wrestler. Now he brings you both sides of the issues facing Naples and all of Southwest Florida. This is the Joe Whitehead Show. Call Joe now at 430-2428.
You know, we're hearing about all these security clearances being taken from people who are already out of office and had been out of office for quite a while. And some of the objections that we're hearing to it have to do with, you know, some of the leftists claiming that, oh, their free speech is being violated. Well, let me ask you this. How long after someone's been in a job should they have a security clearance to begin with? I don't understand why once someone is out of every office in D.C. or at a state or local level government who has some level of security responsibility, that right after they've vacated the position and there's been a transition of someone into their job to replace them, why should anyone have a security clearance at all? This is the question that no one's asking. Instead of all this, there's all this outrage over, oh, there's these guys are being victimized because their security clearance is being taken away. I think it's the other way around. I think the public's been victimized by allowing people to have security clearances long after they've been in jobs. I don't care which administration you want to talk about, going back 30, 40, 50 years. Once you're done, you're done. You don't have a security clearance. I don't understand that. And by the way, this is the Joe Whitehead Show, and we're broadcasting live and armed Saturday, right in the middle of August. I can't wait for this month to be done. It's too hot and it's too humid for me. I want the fall back. Hunting season time. Okay, that's what it's all about. So let's get that here as fast as possible. Great show lined up today. John DePrisco's in the house helping me get through the day, and he's got a special guest we're going to talk to in a little while. John, welcome.
Good morning, Joe.
And we'll give a little preview. You've got someone here who's an attorney. He's representing some people who fought the system.
Yes, and we're going to interview Ben Yermak. And he's currently representing Pam Vicarious.
We're going to hear more about that later on. So stay tuned. That's coming up. We'll hear from school board candidate Darlene Alvarez a little later in the show. And right now, joining us live, we have Amira Fox. She is a deputy state attorney right here in this judicial district, which is all of Southwest Florida, which includes Glades, Hendry, Collier, Lee,
Charlotte,
and Charlotte. Thank you, Charlotte. I always leave out Charlotte County. And she's running also for election to the state attorney's office to replace Steve Russell.
That's
correct. Stepping down. So welcome. Glad you're with us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Good morning to everybody.
First of all, this is the first time you've run for an office.
Yes, it is.
So do you find it's work?
It's incredibly hard, very challenging work. You better have a passion for what you want to do if you want to do this. You better really want the position that you're seeking and truly have the passion to do that position.
Before I get into a couple of questions I want to bring up with you, and when you're out talking to people, what are some of those common things people ask you?
Why would you want to run for office? It's so terrible to have to put yourself out there, to have to put your family out there. And I say, well, I want to be state attorney. I love serving the public and trying to keep the community safe. I know you know my husband, Mike, who worked for the Collier County Sheriff's Office 30 years, and we raised four kids here in this community, so we're both passionately committed to serving the community. And so that's what I always tell people. That's why I'm doing it.
And do you find that there's when you talk to people in the community, because I notice this all the time, there's like a deficit, a knowledge deficit between the average person who works hard, goes does their job, comes home, turns on the news, where they don't really have a full grasp of what local government actually does in their lives. They may know about collusion, Stormy Daniels, and whatever else is out there on mainstream media, but in terms of local government, including the state attorney's office, even law enforcement, even county commission, school board, there's not a wealth of knowledge most people have about it.
That's so true, Joe, and I think it's really true of the position of state attorney. A lot of people confuse it with attorney general. Our attorney general, Pam Bondi, who I'm very proud to announce has endorsed me in this race.
Congratulations.
She just announced her endorsement yesterday. She is the attorney general for the state of Florida. But then you have 20 elected state attorneys, and we're the 20th judicial circuit. Our state attorney, Steve Russell, who's retiring, who's also endorsed me. We do all the on-the-ground criminal prosecution. So every time a state law is violated, it comes through our office for prosecution. So completely different than what the attorney general does, which is manage law lawsuits that are filed against the state of Florida, files lawsuits on behalf of the state of Florida, and actually does the criminal appellate process. But we do the state prosecution of any criminal law that's being violated.
And the state attorney office, I understand, which is has a different role than local state attorneys, which is they'll also render opinions on laws if there's a dispute sometimes without it having to go to the Florida Supreme Court. They'll weigh in sometimes and offer their – this is how they interpret the law.
The attorney general does issue out attorney general opinions, and they're very helpful as a guide to what their interpretation is of the law. You're absolutely correct.
And that's a major point. Where the state attorney doesn't have that. You don't have that role.
No, not at all. In fact, our attorneys look at a case, they look at the facts and the law that applies, and then they make a decision whether to put it into the system and then follow it the entire way through the system up into the appellate stage where it goes to the attorney general's office. If it's a felony, actually, if it's a misdemeanor, we handle our own appeals. But the circuit court felony cases do go up to the attorney general to handle our appeals.
So that's good to know. Here's a question that I think a lot of people have in mind right now based on the unfortunate incident that took place where police officer Jarvis Miller died recently as a result of someone killing him, you know, assaulting him with deadly force. The person who did that is an illegal. They are not here legally in this country.
That's right.
This is not the first time we've heard of this kind of thing happening. Where are the gaps in the system that allow this even to transpire? Because it's my understanding that the suspected killer in this case has had multiple prior incidents of violations of the law, and he's also been processed prior by not by ICE but by INS, and he still remained in this country and still was free to go out and commit this crime.
So, Joe, a couple things as far as that goes. So, number one, the killer of Officer Jobbers Miller is in jail with held with no bond. We have indicted him for first-degree murder of law enforcement, attempted first-degree law enforcement, murder of another police officer who was on scene, and an aggravated assault of law enforcement for a third police officer who was on scene, among many other things. I convened our grand jury last Friday, and we indicted him for all those things. And then yesterday, we've actually met our death penalty review committee, and we have unanimously voted, and Mr. Russell has approved it, to seek the death penalty on the defendant in the case.
And this is a case where this guy has no regard for public safety or anyone. He just...
I am one of the prosecutors on the case, so I will not make personal comments about him, but I'll tell you this as far as your gaps in the system question that you asked me. So he has, since he has been a juvenile, come into contact with the criminal justice system. And back in 2016 was the last time we saw him in Lee County, where he had two doctors who testified on his behalf that he was incompetent to proceed. Our office, the state attorney's office, actually fought that vigorously. We had a two-day hearing where we argued that he should be held competent to proceed because we wanted to send him to prison, thus the deportation proceeding could begin. Unfortunately, we did not win that hearing. The judge found him incompetent to proceed, and he was sent to a state hospital. He was released from the state hospital. He went to Sarasota County, and a few days, which is out of our jurisdiction, a few days before the murder of the police officer happened, he was found competent to proceed in Sarasota by a judge, unfortunately released with some conditions, and incredibly, unfortunately, came back to Lee County, where he committed this atrocious act. So holes in the system, yes. First hole in the system is that he is here illegally, and he's never been deported despite his numerous
He's been in forays. I understand he's been in the hands of INS, but they've never taken action.
That's correct.
Now, see, this is – all right. Let's just stop right there before we go any further. What is it going to take to get that fundamental flaw change in the system? Because there's multiple cases. We can go back to a case from 2 years ago in the state of California where an illegal who'd been processed 5 or 6 times, committed multiple felonies – been before the court numerous times in the state of California, now had committed multiple crimes, including the theft of a firearm from a law enforcement officer's vehicle, used the firearm to kill a member of the community there. And this person should have never been in the country. The killer of police officer Jarvis Miller should have never been in the country to begin with, should have been gone. So we're not catching and getting rid of people who shouldn't be here to begin with. We're letting them stick around, and then they commit these crimes.
there's an underlying flaw here that they should. Why does it take so much to get rid of someone from the country when they're not here legally?
I think that one of the things that we're seeing happening now, which is a very good thing, is that our current administration, President Trump, has realized, okay, wait a minute. We need to look at these INS, ICE rules, and we need to have better standards and much more broad standards for who's going to get deported if they have a brush with the criminal justice system. And I think that President Trump is incredibly wise, and he has said, listen, if you have a brush with the criminal justice system, you are out of here. And the rules have become, in my opinion, much more easy to enforce as far as deportation, instead of saying, well, we can't do it because of this or we can't do it because of that. How about you have a brush with the criminal justice system, you did something wrong, we're going to deport you. So I think that's what we've been moving towards under the new administration, and I certainly see it more and more in the criminal justice system. As a state agency, we're not in charge of deportation. We're not in charge of the criminal prosecution for people who are here illegally. That's the feds. The U.S. Attorney's Office does that. However, we do see people in the system who are here illegally, and certainly that's why we fought so hard in 2016 against Defendant Desmarais to try to get him found competent so that the proceedings could start to send him to prison and deport him. And it's just, you know, incredibly unfortunate that we now sit where we are. And there's so many, in my opinion, holes, as you said, in the system federally as far as the deportation proceedings go. And then, I mean, I don't want to open another whole can of worms, but how about our mental health system where he's released back onto the streets from our mental health holding facility and is free to wander into Sarasota, then released again with no community control put in place and comes here. So, you know, so many holes took place here throughout the time, you know, we tried to put him in custody and get him deported in 2016 up through this terrible, terrible event happening.
So it's clearly a broken system at many levels, and it's taxing the local jurisdictions who have, for example, the responsibility the state attorney's office has and the sheriff's office and the local police. Mm-hmm. They're being taxed. According to one of the gubernatorial candidates, Adam Putnam's been running an ad making a claim that I haven't fact-checked, but I'm going to presume is correct. He's claiming that illegals in the state of Florida on an annualized basis cost the criminal justice system for their housing or their processing somewhere in the neighborhood of $240 million a year. I mean, that's a big chunk of money on people that should not be here to begin with.
I would certainly not dispute that. I have not fact-checked that myself, but certainly it is a huge drain on the criminal justice system.
And it's hurting. So this big gap we have that starts at the federal level is costing and affecting the local agencies who are serving the public, one way or the other.
Yes.
It's causing a problem. We're going to take a quick time out for our sponsors. I just want to make mention of one of the great services here in Southwest Florida, and that's AC by Florida Comfort Systems. It's locally owned and operated and family-run by Danny Martin, who's, by the way, a veteran, served on the USS Saratoga out of Jacksonville, Florida, as a member of the Navy, honorably discharged, moved down here in 1985 and started AC by Florida Comfort Systems. Folks, it's hot out there. You want that AC running. Call AC by Florida Comfort System. Call Danny's crew. They'll come in. They'll make sure your system is running safe, it's running up to speed, that it's functioning the way you want it to function to keep your house cool and dry during this sticky and nasty time of the year. AC by Florida Comfort Systems, they're the award-winning number one company for AC in the state of Florida, in Southwest Florida. Give them a call. You can find them on the Joe Whitehead Show website, and we'll be right back.
98.9 WGUF.
This is the city, Naples, Bonita Springs, Florida. I work here. I'm a locksmith, BB Locksmith. It was season. Everyone's guard was down. Tourists and snowbirds were settled in. Locals were oblivious to the crime being committed around them. That's when I got the call. BB Locksmith.
I need help.
Just the facts, ma'am.
There have been several break-ins in my neighborhood.
Not surprising. In the last quarter, over 1,800 property crimes were reported. And in the last year, the number was almost 8,000.
I think I should improve my locks.
With two shops and a half dozen mobile service vehicles, BB Locksmith can help before you become another statistic.
BB Locksmith is family-owned and operated, and we genuinely care about our neighbors and their security. Find us at bblocksmith.com or call BB Locksmith 2 239-262-2000.
Thank you, BB Locksmith.
Just doing my job, ma'am. BB Locksmith, 262-2000.
Hey, do you want to save, I mean big money? Well, then you need to be purchasing your printer ink cartridge refills at Cartridge Depot. That's right, save up to 50%. 50% less than the big store prices. They're locally owned and operated. These are real people who live right here in Collier County with real answers to your questions. Go in and check out Cartridge Depot. Save big bucks. Get quality products. And by the way, they actually test out their cartridges before they sell them to you. That's right. Quality control from Cartridge Depot. Good products. Save big bucks. Check them out. Cartridge Depot, 2622 Tamiami Trail North. Go there today.
Check them out on thejoewhiteheadshow.com.
Sounds like a game plan to me. And you're listening to the Joe Whitehead Show as we broadcast live and armed on this hot, sticky Saturday. Get your AC running. That's all I got to say. Make sure it works. All right, we're back in studio. We're live in studio. John DePrisco's in the house with us.
Hey.
And we're a couple more questions with Amira Fox, running for state attorney. She's the deputy state attorney here in this district. Has been doing that for you've been the deputy chief.
I've been the
state
deputy
attorney.
About 4 years,
have
and
you?
Then before that, deputy. Well, it's called chief assistant state attorney. Before that, I was deputy chief assistant state attorney. Total of 18 years as a prosecutor, and then also 10 in private practice.
Wow. Okay.
Done both sides.
You've done,
of it.
You've done both.
I have.
And so many people there I still know at the state attorney's office who I worked side by side with on many cases over the years, and the ones that I have contact with, they're very dedicated people. I mean, they really believe in what they do. They want to make things right for the public.
That's right.
There's a lot of hardworking folks that go. You don't hear the names because they don't get the publicity.
No.
But they do a lot of work behind the scenes, and we never know them to thank them, really.
They work incredibly hard and oftentimes for very little money because government is not the highest paying legal industry.
No,
so
it's not.
They're doing it because they love doing it.
No, it's they're the ones who really are for the people.
That's right.
Not the ones that claim that all the time. Okay, look, here's something that frustrates a lot of people in law enforcement particularly and the public per se. You can have someone who's a suspect in a case and you can have piles of information you've gathered that you call evidence. But the person sometimes walks because some of that evidence gets thrown away by a judge who claims it was either processed incorrectly or testimony was gathered incorrectly or someone wasn't read their rights in the correct – not even read their rights. It's reading someone their rights under the correct conditions.
Right.
Is even a further nuance that people don't realize. How frustrating is that to you? And explain to the public a little bit what happens when you lose evidence, which should be good evidence. And all of a sudden it's gone, and that jeopardizes the case.
So in the criminal justice system, when, for instance, we get a case in, we review it. So let's say we get a felony case in on, let's say, a robbery from the Collier County Sheriff's Office. We review it. We put it in the system. Let's say that the defense attorney then gets a hold of it, reads through it, and they say, okay, we see some problems here. Number one, maybe they are going to argue there was an illegal search and seizure. So a search was done of the defendant, let's say, and they found the gun used in the robbery. And they're claiming there was no probable cause to do the search. So they may bring the defense a motion to suppress the gun as evidence, saying this was an unlawful search and seizure. You didn't have probable cause to think that this person had it. It wasn't recent enough. The person didn't give you consent. That may be the type of motion that's brought. Let's say the defendant confessed to doing the robbery. And the defense attorney looks at it and says, well, I don't think, as you just said, Joe, that the law enforcement officer read Miranda warnings. Or let's say they did read them, they didn't read them correctly. They left out a word. Or they made some sort of comment that could be taken as a promise that if they talked, they would get something in return, like leniency.
Mm-hmm.
Any of those things could be used in a motion to suppress. So oftentimes we find ourselves numerous times a day in court throughout the circuit fighting motions to suppress. And so we bring in our law enforcement officer who testifies, and then the defense puts on their case, and then the judge makes the decision whether the evidence is going to be able to be used. If all that evidence got thrown out, sometimes we end up with no case if that happens and the judge decides that none of it has been lawfully taken and suppresses it all.
And this happens more than people realize.
Absolutely.
Because it's easy on the law enforcement to make an honest mistake believing that you've done things correctly. I'll give you an example of one. When Miranda is done, now it could be done completely properly, but if it's not recorded or if there's not a Miranda form where where the defendant is given the opportunity to sign an initial that they've looked at those rights, even though the rights may have been conveyed. It's possible that that could be challenged, and it's possible a judge might go, I mean, some judges might not go for that. They may take the officer's word and say, no,
exactly,
he said they read your rights, you're fine. But another judge might look at it and say, well, I don't have the evidence I need to say to validate the officer's claim, so I have to throw that out. That can happen. And the officer could have done his job in good faith.
That's absolutely true. We have really great law enforcement here in our circuit, and they have been very good about, let's get it on tape, let's get it on video, let's do the Miranda consent form where the defendant initials and says, yes, I will talk to you, to stop that type of argument being successful where a defendant can say, I didn't give consent, I didn't never said that, they're not telling the truth. Yes, oftentimes the court will judge credibility and give, you know, and decide which party is more credible. However, it is always nice to have it in writing or on tape, and we have really good law enforcement that does follow that and do that so that someone doesn't even have that argument.
It's really become more of a check, and you know, you have to check everything off
Differently.
All right, we're just about out of time for this, but Amira, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks so much,
Joe. Any message to the listeners on your behalf?
Well, yeah, I'd like to say hi to all the listeners, especially to all my law enforcement friends who I know are out there listening to you, and I want to just tell everybody, I love law enforcement. I've been endorsed by your sheriff here, Sheriff Rambosk and Sheriff Scott and all our other sheriffs within our circuit, and by the NRA and the Unified Sportsmen of Florida with an A rating for my strong Second Amendment support and stance. So I hope that everybody listening will check the box for Fox as we head into early voting today and voting on August 28th in the Republican primary.
And who knows, before it's over, you may get even a presidential endorsement, right?
That would be wonderful.
That could happen. Okay.
Take care of that, Joe.
All right. Thanks for joining us this morning.
You.
Thanks for all those clarifications on those cases.
You're welcome. Thank
all
you.
All right. Coming up next, we have Ben Yormack. He's a local attorney. And we wanted him to come in here because he's been in the middle of some of the more interesting cases in Collier County that don't always make the headlines. And John DePrisco, yep, I'm going to let you give a little bit of information about Ben, about why this is critical for our listeners to hear about him today.
Well, disclosure, Ben has been my attorney in prior litigation, but right now he is representing Pamela Vicarious. This was raised by Joe a couple of months ago on his show. And just to give some background, Pam is the principal of the Manatee Middle School, was fired and is now suing the Collier County School District for violating her rights under the First Amendment as well as the Florida Public Whistleblowers Act. Our in-studio guest is Ben. He's the founder of Yormack Employment and Disability Law. He is representing Pamela in her lawsuit. Couple of stories that are in the background. The NBC-2.com story of May 7th by Rachel Polanski. And I'll quote, according to her lawsuit, Vicarious claims she is being retaliated against by the district. In one case, she said she reported a drunk teacher to the sheriff's office. In another, she reported sexually inappropriate text messages between a bus driver and a young girl to the sheriff's office. Both times, she said the district discouraged her from involving law enforcement. And of course, our favorite Naples Daily News correspondent, Annika Hammerschlag, had an article on June 6th. That also detailed that she's accusing the district of First Amendment violations. So, Ben, welcome to the studio.
Good morning, guys.
You know, you seem to take on these cases where it's the person trying to do the right thing, in the case of some of these employees, against the system who doesn't like it.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what's the core of these cases, really.
That's absolutely the core. Stand up, do the right thing, but you shouldn't be retaliated against for doing it.
Wow. And this is like your specialty area, in a way.
It is, and I love what I do.
How much of this actually goes on by the system, let's say whether it's the school system or other large systems, to just get rid of someone and they just say, well, we may be wrong, but we're going to bite the bullet on the losses we take here because we just want this person out of here for whatever their reason is. Is that the mindset, the prevailing mindset in some of these? That they just want this person gone even if it costs them?
Yeah, I think that happens a lot, and the cases that hit the media are only the tip of the iceberg. I can't tell you how many phone calls that we get from people who have tried to do the right thing, but the law maybe just doesn't afford them a remedy, and so they're out of luck, and the system wins just because the law isn't in place to help them. Now, the cases that obviously hit the media, like Ms. Vicarious's case here, there is a remedy. So she is in a position to enforce her rights, but so often we see employees are just fallen between the cracks. They do the right thing, but, you know, the law's not there to help them. So you're out of a job, and now you got to tell every other employer you apply to that you've been fired. So bad enough you get fired in the first instance, right? Now the knife's in your back again because you got to report that you were terminated.
So it hurts twice.
It's a double whammy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But look, here's the part of this I think a lot of people don't understand. The concept of whistleblower, if you explain this law a little bit, but you'll do it much better than I would, is to protect the person who legitimately finds maybe something harmful or illegal or dangerous that's going on in a work environment or as a practice that's being done by a workplace. And they want to call it to someone's attention for the benefit of, you know, the safety of the public, let's say, or the employees, but also in some ways for the good of the company itself. So what they're doing is and coming forward is an act of good faith to prevent a tragedy in many ways. Is that accurate?
It's accurate. And tragedy, you know, can be a physical tragedy if it's perhaps like an OSHA violation that's going on with an unsafe workplace, or just, you know, other kinds of public monies being expended. You know, we see a lot of that. We get a lot of public whistleblower cases where an employee who's privy to the information comes forward and says, hey, we're wasting public funds, or someone's just flat out stealing. Well, the problem is most often that person who's guilty is usually their boss.
Okay.
So who do you report it to? You've got to go further up the chain of command. And if that person believes the boss over you, generally the whistleblowers now put themselves out there and they got a target on their back that's unbelievable. And that boss is going to be gunning for him. I can't tell you how often we see fact patterns just like we see in Ms. Vicarious's case where you've got a sterling reputation, glowing performance reviews. That is until they try to enforce the law or bring whistleblowing activities forward. And all of a sudden, then, lo and behold, they're just the world's worst employee who can't stay there any longer.
Well, this I can tell you, not pertaining to this specific case, but to other specific instances I've become aware of over the years, that as an entity, the Collier County Public School System does not like the reporting of information regarding a criminal act that took place within the system or something an employee did, which let's say it crosses those criminal lines, to law enforcement because they don't want this on the record. And they put not having this on the record over and above the well-being of the people that could be affected by these actions. That's not my opinion. I can go fact by fact, case by case, and give you examples where this has taken place. The bigger question is, why aren't they as a system being called out for this? I mean, this is a systemic flaw.
It absolutely is. And I think this lawsuit just highlights that point. I mean, the stuff that Ms. Vicarious was complaining about has to do with protecting kids. I mean, you've got a teacher that showed up to work intoxicated. What time does school start? Somebody showing up drunk? And you don't want to involve law enforcement? And maybe what's not in the lawsuit, and listeners don't know, is that teacher actually then backed his car up when he was trying to leave and hit a parent's vehicle.
And then fled.
And we still weren't going to call your sheriff?
Yeah,
what is going on?
You know, and this is, you know, I guess it's fair to say, well, maybe the guy just needed a few belts in the morning so he could face the class. But, you know, the bottom line is you don't drink before you go to work. Okay, you don't drink at work.
Absolutely not. Not to mention, who are you in charge of?
Kids. Yeah, you don't even let them drink at school.
Oh, gosh.
You know, but I mean, it's just, you can't do things like this. And then as an employer, cover it up because that you're violating the sanctity of the safety of those workspaces by letting people act out in that way and not documenting and not doing something about it.
Well, I think it gets to a larger problem too, right? But what do we want with a public education system? Do we want the public education system who's going to enforce the law, get that drunk teacher the heck out of our school system, forget about the school itself, out of the system? Or do we just want to cover it up and pretend like this is just Stepford and nothing ever happens in our school systems? Everything's wonderful and rosy. It's not.
Well, wherever you have collections of human population, you're going to have problems. People bring their whole life into whatever workplace it is. They bring their good points. They bring their problems. So these problems will always spill over into every environment. That's just human nature. Every work environment, every school environment, every recreational environment inherits the problems of the people that participate. There's no escaping that reality.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the bottom line is in every place you're going to have problems pop up. You want a problem-solving mindset that addresses the problems and keeps the workplace safe, not a cover-up plan.
Absolutely. And Ms. Vicarious fits that to a T. She was, let's clean schools up. I mean, she took the school she was at to an A-rated school. I mean, this was almost the functional equivalent of the 0-16 Cleveland Browns making the playoffs the next few years.
Yeah, no kidding. No, she actually did her job.
She did her job.
She did her job.
And you know what? She did it well until she, you know, wanted to make sure the kids were safe and wanted to make sure that the sheriff's office got involved. Well, then she's just a bully.
And look, the sheriff's office in this county does want to know when something's wrong. They do take action. They do document. They do follow up. So they're the guys you want to call.
Absolutely.
If there's a problem. They do a very good job at this. Hey, let's continue this discussion after the break. Well, let's take a time out right now. I want to talk about one of the greatest doctors in the entire state of Florida. He's right here in Southwest Florida, and that's Dr. Albert Alessi. He runs an old type of practice, an old type of medical practice, where you actually get to know him. You call him, he calls you back. You see him, he talks to you about your wellness, your lifestyle. He talks about whatever illnesses are bothering you. He does everything he can to keep you healthy or to get you past whatever's bothering you. Now, he's right here in the Bonita Springs area. You can find him by going to their website, alessifamilycare.com. Contact Dr. Albert Alessi if you need a physician or if you don't have one and you're looking for a good one, this is the guy to go to. He's the go-to man for your medical needs in Southwest Florida. Dr. Albert Alessi, alessifamilycare.com, and he's also on the Joe Whitehead Show website. And we'll be right back.
98.9 WGUF.
Managing your lawn care needs is a priority for all homeowners. Classic Lawns is number one when it comes to mowing, trimming, fertilizing, and landscaping. Owner and hands-on manager Manny Torero can give you an estimate and get the job done. Classic Lawns of Collier County is my own lawn care, landscaping, and tree trimming choice. Make them yours. Classic Lawns offers the best lawn care at reasonable rates. If you want the best, call Classic Lawns of Collier County Incorporated. Call them today at 455-6900. You'll be glad you did.
This is the city, Naples, Bonita Springs, Florida. I work here. I'm a locksmith, BB Locksmith. It was season. Everyone's guard was down. Tourists and snowbirds were settled in. Locals were oblivious to the crime being committed around them. That's when I got the call. BB Locksmith.
I need help.
Just the facts, ma'am.
There have been several break-ins in my neighborhood.
Not surprising. In the last quarter, over 1,800 property crimes were reported. And in the last year, the number was almost 8,000.
I think I should improve my locks.
With two shops and a half dozen mobile service vehicles, BB Locksmith can help before you become another statistic.
BB Locksmith is family-owned and operated, and we genuinely care about our neighbors and their security. Find us at bblocksmith.com or call BB Locksmith. 239-262-2000.
Thank you, BB Locksmith.
Just doing my job, ma'am.
BB Locksmith, 262-2000.
Oh, yeah. I can smell the gunpowder already. Gets me buzzing first thing in the morning when I strap on that gun, pin on that badge, and take down some doors. Yeah. All right, we are back. This is the Joe Whitehead Show, broadcasting live and armed. Hot, sticky Saturday in August. I wish October would hurry up and get here. We need to cool off a little bit. I've about had it with this summer. The summer starts here like at the end of March. I mean, it's St. Patrick's Day, you're in summer. It's just too long. It is. When do you get any cool weather down here?
You get three weeks.
2 weeks in February or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. Hey, if you want to comment, folks, I forgot to go off the number earlier. Anything you want to talk about with us on the show today, 430-2428. That's the number, 430-2428. We've got your friend Ben Yormack with us here, who's a great local attorney. Good to have you here.
Pleasure to be here.
And you're a specialist in employment disability law, particularly the whistleblower issues.
Absolutely, yes.
And you've had some very interesting cases you've been successful with. You're currently representing one particular employee, Pam Vicarious, as we mentioned in the last segment, versus the Collier County School System. This school system, in many ways, and you brought the term up on the break, but I want to borrow it from you now. It's almost the Stepford system. They want everyone patterned and repeating the same whatever spewage that comes out of their mouths at all times, that everything's perfect, life is great, there's nothing to be challenged, nothing to see here, go home. I mean, that's the message.
That's the message.
And the truth is, that's not true.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. You don't have to peel back too many layers of the onion to see what's really going on.
What's the biggest fear you think some of these administrators, what's the big thing they're hiding behind the curtain that they don't want? I mean, what could it be? Because look, every system has flaws. Every system has people that bring things into it that are a problem. And the normal thing to do in the course of human events is fix the problems, let people know. I compare this to most of the dioceses in this country now are under scrutiny of the Catholic Church because of the covering and the failure to report and deal with multiple members of the clergy who engage in acts of sexual assault and pedophilia against kids in their churches, in their parishes for years and years and years. You know, the victim toll is up in the thousands. The numbers who we know of who committed these acts are in the hundreds. And it looks so much worse to have covered up and to have this conspiracy of covering, whether it was a conspiracy to cover or not, the pattern, the practice of covering, looks so much worse than it would have if when these individual acts had come up, they were exposed, taken seriously, condemned, dealt with, because the organization would have still had its credibility. Is the school system in a position like the Catholic Church in some ways where it may have a whole backlog of problems that it just doesn't want anybody to look at, so they don't want audits, they don't want anybody looking behind the curtain? Is that where we are?
Well, I think just generally, whenever you have the cover-up, that's where you lose public confidence. And that's something that administration in any form, be it public, private, they lose sight of that. That it's not the wrongdoing in the first instance that usually leads to the outrage. It's not. It's the cover-up. I mean, you don't need to look much further than Bill Clinton, right? It actually wasn't the sacks that got him in the trouble. It was the vast cover-up he tried to get. Absolutely.
It was the cover-up.
It was the cover-up.
Yeah.
And so we see the same thing. And I think the best leaders are those that come in, recognize the faults and the mistakes, and take action decisively on them. Not just try to cover up, you know, what happened and pretend that everything's just wonderful in this case, the Collier County school system. Because it's not. These are cases that should have been dealt with right away. You know, Pam Vicarious took proactive measures. And, you know, one of the complaints, and we were talking about it at the break, was, you know, that she was demanding that the, you know, one teacher be perfect. Well, it's called a job. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to do your job. I'm a big New England Patriots fan, so I'll quote Bill Belichick here. Do your job. That was the rally cry
right.
of the Pats.
Well, everyone's
do the
got,
job.
Everyone's got a job to do.
And do it. And if you're not doing it right, you're going to get corrected. It's not called going to fun. It's called going to work. Okay?
Yeah.
And that's something that I think is lost. And this gets into a much larger, you know, social and political issue of what kind of teachers and administrators do we want for our kids? Do we want the everybody gets a medal kind of approach or the hypersensitive, you know, oh, you looked at me the wrong way, so, you know, I'm going to file a bullying complaint against you. No. I don't want that for my kids, and I don't think most of your listeners would want that either. What we want is somebody who's going to be a strong leader who enforces the rules, puts forth great values, and turns bad schools to good schools. And if that means you got to make some personnel changes to do that, you do. The Cleveland Browns are going to stay 0-16 if they don't make changes. Well, they did make changes. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see if they were the right changes.
They'll see if they're the right changes. But, you know, you have to make changes to improve. Otherwise, you're going to stay exactly where you are and just scratch your head and say, gee, I wonder why we're not getting any better. We have the same problems that aren't being dealt with. Vicarious dealt with the problems, and the people that were problems didn't like it.
Well, you know, going back several years, many years ago, I can tell you this. I'm aware of people who were given awards like Principal of the Year, then the next year demoted and put in some kind of a out-of-the-way administrative position where they were, you know, out of sight, out of mind. It almost seems as if when people excel in this system, it might be immediately noted, and then there's this purge to say, okay, enough of that stuff, let's go back to business as usual. I think that has been present for a long time in the system. And I think in the case of Pam Vicarious, hers was more obvious because she went into a school that was performing poorly. She was able to turn it around. She worked with the staff, turned it around. And then the ones who were dissatisfied with whatever discomfort they had from her giving direction or holding people accountable or challenging people, you know, to do better or to do their best and who were offended by that, then somehow got the, you know, they got this snowflake, avalanche of snowflakes together to come, you know, charging at her with the support of the administration. And lo and behold, she's out. Well, the snowflakes who are underperforming are still there.
Absolutely.
That's the problem. Okay, when you purge out the people trying to bring positive change, and you keep the dead wood, it's kind of like pruning a tree. You leave the dead branches on and clean the, and cut the good ones off. Okay, it's sort of a reverse pruning, and that's what this system does. Okay, they completely get it backwards. Hey, we've got let's jump on the phone here. We've got school board candidate Darlene Alvarez on the line, guys. Let's talk. Why don't we talk to her, because this is on topic too. She might have some things to say about this. Darlene, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe. Hey, glad to be here. Thank you.
You're running for school board in District 5.
Yeah.
And tell us, you heard what we're talking about here. We're talking about a particular case and other cases in which elements of the school system, employees of the school system, have been purged or run out for apparently doing their job and holding other people accountable. This is not the first time we've heard of this. I'm sure you've heard of something like this before. What's your take on it?
I have heard of it before, and I think the issue, Joe, that, I mean, we'll say is Collier County Schools as a whole. I said, I don't see any consistency, and I'm a certified HR professional, and to me, this is the biggest thing that I see within the school system, that there's no consistency. And if what you do for one employee, they don't necessarily do for another. So if you try and hold one person accountable, they let it slide for somebody else. And this is the part that I see as maybe the largest issue within, you know, within HR, within the school system, within the whole organization.
Now, how would you, if you're elected as one board member, what would be your pledge to the public to try to do something about this? Because it's hard if you're the lone dissenting voice amongst, you know, four zombie-like lockstepers who, you know, have their eyes gazed to the east and their hand out. I mean, how do you approach this?
I mean, it's got to be handled from, you know, look, it's got to be handled from the top management down, and everybody understands it. So, and basically, look, if we have defined policies in place with our handbooks within the Collier County school system, there shouldn't be a question of what the correct measures are moving forward. If you have an issue, you should know the correct chain of command moving up the chain, and then from top management down, employees should be, you know, they should understand that these are the policies we have in place, this is where you go to if you have any issues. And then on top of that, let employees know that it's okay to come forward. That's why large organizations, Fortune 500 companies, have open door policies to protect employees.
That's a great point. But look, I don't know if you know our superintendent, if you've talked to her, if you've met with her, but what do you say to our superintendent to fix this when some people argue she's part of the cover up problem? That's what a lot of the people who've battled the system are trying to say. What do you say to her if you're an elected school board member?
Look, I would say to her, you know, we've had several lawsuits with this happening. We're even within Collier County, like, so we're losing our tax dollars fighting these claims for disgruntled employees. I know we've had several of them, but this could have all been resolved from, you know, starting off at the beginning. That look, what you do for one employee, you've got to do for everybody. You can't give one preferential teacher to one person, you know, and then let this other person slide. And we hear of that so much within the community of it happening. Parents, teachers, students, everybody hears of, well, this person got away with this, and this person did this. Oh, but that person, you know, got on a school bus and, you know, told some kids to behave, and then he was up for termination. So you've got to be consistent.
That was just in the news recently, and I found that one even more disturbing, because it appears as if you had some kids on a school bus out of control. A driver who was not a regular driver, a substitute driver that didn't have the wherewithal to handle it. There were some public safety issues at stake. This band director stepped up and did something about it, called it out at least, to try to calm the situation down. And he was facing termination. Now suddenly there's been a reversal in this situation for whatever the reasons. Okay,
this one they reversed.
This was just recently just reversed.
Consistency.
And I was at that board meeting when it got reversed.
Yeah, and the point is, I would love to know what there must have been an overriding fear in this one to get that kind of reversal, because they usually, you know, it's kind of like stepping into the dog droppings. They usually step into it confidently every time, not caring about it. In this case, they didn't seem to want to step in it when they realized they were getting ready to step in it. So what was different about this one than the other ones? I'm not really sure.
You had an overwhelming response from students and parents and other of his professionals that stepped forward and said, look, you're making a huge mistake. You can't have, they said to Dr. Patton, you cannot have a, if you see it, say it policy, and then somebody steps up and says, look, I see it, I said it, I did something about it, and then be terminated. This is not the situation where you should terminate somebody. If it's for something else, or he's basically disgruntled a student or something along those lines, that's one thing. But to actually say, look, all summer we've been campaigning for school safety and how can we fix this, and, you know, let's look at every situation. And then you have a teacher that does something and says, you know what, look, you know, these kids are, you know, being disruptive on the bus that's going 55 miles per hour. I step up and say something, and then I'm going to be terminated. It was the wrong method. Well,
this guy
terminate.
Should have been given a bonus. You know, they're trying to fire a guy that did this, but the teacher who got drunk before and after school and hit cars in the parking lot is still teaching. This guy who did the right thing was in fear of losing his job. There's something extremely Ben's looking at me shaking his head. There's something extremely wrong with the system here.
It's election season, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's no consistency among this, you know, the school system.
Right. There's no consistency, and there's an election. So maybe that has something to do with the sudden reversal when there's a public outcry. If it's not election season, maybe we just don't care.
But the things that are – what I'm just amazed, the things that are covered up that are violations of public safety where there's no urgency to do anything, those things linger and maybe eventually are dealt with. When this guy just did the right thing – I for the life of me cannot figure what the grounds were to take action against him. I can't find one thing in the chain of actions that he took that warranted the response. They should have been giving him a bonus and buying him an after-school 12-pack of beer, not to be drunk during school day.
And I don't know what happened, but you probably had some parent make a complaint that, you know, the teacher talked a little sternly to the kid.
Yep.
Well, sorry, that's what kids misbehaving.
If he hadn't done anything and someone said, well, you were in the area, you didn't do anything and this bus had an accident and kids got hurt.
Absolutely.
Oh, that kind of
Catch 22.
There you go. Hey, Darlene, hold on to the line. We're going to take a timeout. We've got a commercial break coming up. So we're going to take a quick timeout. We'll get back to this. We'll hear Ben weigh in on this some more and John weigh in on this some more. And before we go there, I just want to make mention of the Neapolitan Gourmet. Folks, if you like great Italian food, go to Neapolitan Gourmet. They're at the corner of Airport and Pine Ridge in the Bed Bath & Beyond Plaza. And if you want the best Italian sub you've ever had, this is the place to go get it. Not only do you have the best bread to put it on, the best imported Italian meats. It's got the best sopressata there, capicola. Go in and get one of those subs and just hunker down on it. You will have the treat of a lifetime. That's Vinny at the Neapolitan Gourmet, best Italian deli foods in Naples, Florida. Go check them out. Bed Bath & Beyond Plaza at the corner of Airport and Pine Ridge. Neapolitan Gourmet. And we'll be right back.
98.9 WGUF Naples FM Talk. Now you can listen live at WGUF989.com.
Hey, do you want to save? I mean big money? Well, then you need to be purchasing your printer ink cartridge refills at Cartridge Depot. That's right. Save up to 50%. 50% less than the big store prices. They're locally owned and operated. These are real people who live right here in Collier County with real answers to your questions. Go in and check out Cartridge Depot. Save big bucks. Get quality products. And by the way, they actually test out their cartridges before they sell them to you. That's right. Quality control from Cartridge Depot. Good products. Save big bucks. Check them out. Cartridge Depot, 2622 Tamiami Trail North. Go there today.
Check them out on thejoewhiteheadshow.com.
Managing your lawn care needs is a priority for all homeowners. Classic Lawns is number one when it comes to mowing, trimming, fertilizing, and landscaping. Owner and hands-on manager Manny Torero can give you an estimate and get the job done. Classic Lawns of Collier County is my own lawn care, landscaping, and tree trimming choice. Make them yours. Classic Lawns offers the best lawn care at reasonable rates. If you want the best, call Classic Lawns of Collier County Incorporated. Call them today at 455-6900. You'll be glad you did.
This is the Joe Whitehead Show, the fast lane of talk radio. And your calls are welcome at 430-2428. All right, we're going to jump back on the phone. We've got in studio John DePrisco's here. John, thanks for being here. Also, we've got Ben Yormack, local attorney who does some amazing cases involving people being fired wrongly for being whistleblowers. So he does a great job with that. And school board candidate Darlene Alvarez is on the line. Darlene, let's go back to you. So you're running for this office. What's the number one thing you want to bring to Collier County that doesn't have right now?
Well, I mean, the number one thing I want to bring is that increase opportunities for the vocational and trade schools with our students. I mean, we've seemed to funnel most kids into going into college, and a lot of kids come out, they're in debt, they're still living with mom and dad, and they still don't have you know, the skill sets needed to join our market. So basically, I'm really putting in vocational training, immediate employment for students after going to college or before, and get these students up and trained. The second most thing is provide financial transparency and accountability of our district spending. We have a lot of bureaucrats that are spending our money and our tax dollars, and I want to fight against irresponsible spending.
I understand that our public school system in Collier County is the only public entity that does not go through regular audits, and my understanding is the last actual audit of the system was over 25 years ago. Is that accurate, what I've heard?
Well, I mean, they have had, let's say, they had a firm that took the external audit, and however, they're not going by the recommendations of the audit that they have. So when you look at it, you need to have a combination of an external audit as well as an internal audit, because the internal audit is the one that catches on the state, local level, whereas your external audit will catch those larger items that go into it.
But you
have to have both.
Granted, I agree with you. They do. But it's as if these things have no impact. There's nothing changes. I mean, what actually changes when these external audits are done? What have we seen different? Is my question.
We're not. That's the issue.
That's my point. In other words, they do lip service to this audit and then go about business as usual.
Correct. The recommendations for the audit was to look at the payroll, look at the employee benefits, and neither of which have been dealt with as of yet.
And then look at contracts, right?
Correct. And yeah. That's where millions and millions of the dollars is spent on the current contracts that they have. They never open them up for bid. You don't get to look at, you know, small employers here that can maybe take advantage of it. They have the exact same vendors every single year.
So nobody wins, really, other than those vendors.
Correct.
Wow.
Correct.
Hey, one other question. We have a superintendent who's on an extended contract that's been renewed well into the future without annual reviews going up to that. Have you ever heard of this before?
Me? No. No, I have not heard of that. I mean, when you look at, I mean, just take a typical company. Every regular employee has a performance review yearly. If it's done within the first 30 days, 90 days, end of the year, and those performance reviews tie back to accountable measures that should have been in place for the employee to achieve. If not, then you hold them to that on the performance review. I've never heard of somebody giving a contract because, look, ultimately what would happen, let's say we renewed her for 3 years. We are stuck as taxpayers to pay her salary for 3 years, whether she performs well or not, because we gave her that contract.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, listen, Darlene, I want to thank you for taking the time to call in here today. And you want to say something about your campaign?
Yes, well, I mean, I want to say vote starting today. Early voting starts today. I'm actually on my way heading to Marco Island. Look, I want to build brighter futures. I come to Collier County with a completely different agenda. I'm here for students, for parents. As a business person, I bring prepared to stand up to our companies and let business owners know that, look, Collier County should be a resource for our business owners, for students that graduate. And then my experience gives me a unique insight of what I bring to the board. There's no other certified HR person. There's no person that's running in my district that's a parent. And then on top of that, you know, I bring business common sense to the board.
All right. Well, thank you. Listen, thanks for joining us on the show, and the best of luck to you.
Thank you very much, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you, Darlene. I want to kick this back to, we only have a couple minutes left, but Ben, you've heard all these arguments back and forth about things going on in the school system. If you had to take a stab at what's the big thing they're hiding behind the curtain? Any idea at all? I mean, because you're seeing this stuff more in depth than most people ever do.
Yeah, we see an underbelly of employment that the rest of the world doesn't see. We get the calls from people that really know what's going on. Sometimes they have a legal remedy. Sometimes they don't. But obviously, the biggest concern is what we've been talking about here today, and it's accountability. And that, you know, the leadership, it starts right at the leadership. If the leaders aren't taking accountability and holding themselves accountable, what happens to the culture in any organization, but particularly in a public body like the school system? Astonishing that we don't have performance reviews for a superintendent. I'm absolutely floored because, you know, every one of my clients who's a teacher, and I represent a ton of teachers, they all get performance reviews. All of them.
Every year, annually.
And you know what? They're renewed year by year, not multi-year. And if they don't perform the subsequent year, they are at risk of their contract not getting renewed.
Good point.
Because it drives performance.
Good point. We're just about out of time. Thank you. We're going to have you come back.
Okay. I'd be glad to.
John, we got to do this again.
Absolutely.
And
I'd love to have him.
Thank you for your behind the scenes, your research, your preparation. You know what's going on out in the community. You see things so many people never see.
Well, thanks, Joe.
And we're gonna get more into some of those things because it's shocking some of the things that happen that people don't even know about.
Yeah. Ben, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Great having both of you here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. We want to thank all of our sponsors, first of all. Without our sponsors, we wouldn't have this show. We love having our sponsors. We want you as a community to support them. And if you ever want to be a sponsor, have advertising on this show, you just contact me directly through Facebook or through the website, and I'll be glad to provide you with advertising that will reach a big audience of people who are loyal to the sponsors of this show. That I can say for sure. All right, folks, have a great weekend. Stay out of the heat. And as always, keep the grill hot and the beer cold. And we'll see you next week.